Hello and welcome back to The Truth About Public Sector, the podcast where we cut through the jargon, explore the realities and shine a light on the people making differences behind the scenes in our public institutions. I'm your host, Hannah Quinn Hill, and today we're diving into the world of procurement, but not as you might know it. Joining me today is someone who knows this world inside and out. Mark Pearson is the Learning and Development Lead at Crescent Purchasing Consortium, a chartered procurement professional with an MSc, and someone who's spent years helping schools, colleges, and public sector bodies not just buy better, but also think smarter. We'll be talking about skills gaps, digital transformation, ethical procurement, and yes, we'll be busting some myths too. So whether you're in the sector, working alongside it, or just procurement curious, this would be the episode for you. Hi, Mark. How are you doing today?
Hi, Hannah. I'm fine. Yourself?
Yeah, not bad. Thank you. Not bad. Thank you so much.
No, thank you for having me along. So, yeah.
We've been quite excited about this one because when you and I caught up initially, we had quite a lot to say, didn't we? So we're going to have to see how much we get through today and how much we get to cover. And that in mind, I'm going to kick straight off with asking you to tell us a bit about your journey into procurement, Mark, and how you ended up at CPC.
Well, there we are. So most people don't sort of think about procurement as a career, they fall into it. I'm no exception. So I started life in 1989 as a quantity surveyor and became a chartered quantity surveyor, and 20 years managing contracts, procuring contracts in the construction industry. Then in 2009, in the downturn, I'm working for a small organisation in Rochdale. It doesn't survive the recession, and I'm looking for a job for the first time, using my transferable skills and my recently acquired master's in construction law and dispute resolution. I end up as a project manager in the public sector in a local authority. One of the modules in that master's was a module on European procurement law. And as soon as the procurement service in the council picked up on that, all of a sudden I'm running this massive 42-lot construction professional services framework procurement. And I didn't really look back. So that's me into the into a council and then moving on to a different local authority in procurement. And then, lucky enough, in 2019, I'm able to think about reducing to a three-day week, semi-retirement in a way, but to enable me to do volunteering work on my other days. And when I cast my eye around for a three-day week job, the CPC were advertising for a three-day week procurement consultant. When I looked at the CPC and I saw what they were doing in the background to support its members with procurement knowledge and templates, I thought, wow, I've been trying to do this within my services for years and they're doing it, as a matter of course. So that attracted me to CPC. Fortunately, they liked me. 4 years into that role, and they develop a learning development lead role. Someone taps me on the shoulder and says, Mark, this has got your name written all over it. I think you better apply. I applied on the basis that they kept me at 3 days a week. And here we are.
And, you know, it's so funny because everyone I speak to finds their way into procurement. They never start out leaving school thinking, I want to work in procurement. And it seems to be that common journey, but I think a lot of professionals are better for it because you see the services that you impact by taking that route into the industry, and it allows you to create better bonds and partnerships with your stakeholders. So for anyone not familiar, Crescent Purchasing Consortium, what is it they do?
So we're a charity, and we are essentially a public sector buying organisation. So the main work that we do is put in place frameworks and other routes to market that the education sector primarily, but the wider public sector can access to get value for money and to reduce their procurement journey for each individual procurement exercise. But we're more than that, because as a charity, we make a surplus, we don't make a profit. That surplus is reinvested back into education, either through grants or roles like myself. We also have a team of regional procurement advisors across the country who at no cost will come into your education establishment and advise you on all matters procurement, and what they can't deal with, they push on to me. or to our consultancy side. And the little bit of our side that's commercial really is our consultancy service. And we have people that will parachute into your organisation and become your procurement function on either 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 days a week, or indeed sit at home on demand. And if you're okay for 90% of what you do, but you just need a bit of help and advice with a complicated arrangement, they will help you with that complicated arrangement, put it in place, wave goodbye to you, and wait for the next time that you knock on the door. So, but the essence of it really is everything that we do, the profits that we make are surpluses, and those surpluses get reinvested back into the sector.
And that's so important, isn't it? Because if you think about the education sector, there's academy trusts that are small or large that don't have procurement teams, you know, since they left the local authority or whatever those schools decided to do to become independent. And then the colleges who have strong finance teams but maybe don't have that procurement expertise that can really utilise your services and make sure they're doing procurement the right way and the best. But with that in mind, and I know your area particularly now is learning and development, that's your niche area, and you're leading and developing at the CPC. So what does L&D look like for you, and what's that world of public sector procurement doing that you're teaching them about?
Well, it's been quite a revelation actually coming into this role, because when you sat there as a procurement person doing your job, sometimes in isolation from other procurement colleagues, because you're supporting your clients and your budget holders. The one thing you assume is that everybody else is doing what you do, perhaps at your level.
Yes.
And it came as quite a surprise for me to find out that generally across the public sector, that procurement expertise isn't necessarily as advanced as I thought it might be. I think the Procurement Act has done a lot to expose those weaknesses, because, of course, we're now involved in communities of practice with the Cabinet Office, and we've got informal procurement groups across the country going on where people are sharing ideas. And some of the questions that are coming up are questions that I would thought were maybe a little bit naive. That's no criticism of anybody. But there have been times that I've been able to help people where I thought, wow, I thought everybody possibly knew that. So what does learning development look like for me? Well, on 3 days a week, and I still feel exhausted when I say all this, I'm looking after 65 procurement facing professionals within the charity. So those are people in our contracting team, our consultancy team, and our regional procurement advisors who are across the country. And we are national, even though we're based in Salford, we are a national outfit. And we have over 10,600 institutional members. So those are either schools, academy trusts, or further education colleges. We do have one or two university members, but not many. And I am really just making sure that they've got the resources and the knowledge and the expertise to approach procurement from their perspective in the right manner. And that's not necessarily at a high level. It's just making sure it's fit for purpose.
And that's, again, a really interesting point, because I speak to a lot of tenured, credible procurement professionals who experienced and came up in a world where procurement had to be very commercial. You had to really negotiate. You had to really get into the thick of it with your stakeholders. And then another generation came through of very framework savvy, dependent members of staff. And there seems to be a real juxtaposition between that skill set, and now the Procurement Act is bringing that commercial negotiable acumen to the forefront again. And that skill set's really hard for a lot of people to share and to mentor into new procurement professionals. You know, what skills gaps have you noticed in the public sector when you've been working with them?
I think you've just hit the nail on the head, and that is there seems to be a bit of a reluctance at the moment in the public sector to, I won't say think outside the box is possibly the wrong phrase, but certainly to engage with all stakeholders as soon as possible, and that includes suppliers. You know, there's this, you know, I think people talk about, if you were going to bust any procurement myths, one of the myths I would probably bust is you can talk to your suppliers at early opportunities. The Procurement Act is sort of highlighting that with the requirement for pipeline notice or the requirement for early engagement notices, but more importantly, with the requirement in your tender notices to advise or explain why you've not had early engagement. So that maybe we'll actually focus on, speak to everybody, get everyone around the table, talk to people about what's going on. You're better off doing that if you've had that experience in life. So if you come from a commercial background into procurement, where you've had to deal with suppliers in whatever way, shape or form, even if it's just through contract management, you will have more confidence at actually sitting around the table with people. And it's just thinking, be honest and open with everybody. And hopefully they'll be honest and open with you, but having the savvy to realise when perhaps someone's stringing you along. And if I say anything about anyone comes into procurement at an earlier age, that's the thing that they lack. They've got the enthusiasm, they've got the ability to learn. There's a very structured way around the Procurement Act and general procurement regulations that mean you can learn what you need to do. But learning what you need to do doesn't necessarily tie in with, you know, can you see when the wool's being pulled over your eyes? It's just having that experience of life, really, that just gives you that extra 10%.
I totally agree. And I think that pre-market engagement, or, you know, actually market research, you know, we call it pre-market engagement, but your stakeholders might be asking for something that isn't possible, you know, that you can't do. And it might be a wasted tendering exercise if you don't engage with the market early enough to find out what's possible, what's not possible, to make sure that you're, you know, that you're, what you're looking for, your specification, is possible. And as a supplier,
we have another problem, that is specifications. It's, if you get your specification right, your contract will be right. You know, budget holders, stakeholders, contract managers, they will look at the procurement function and say, well, provide us with the specification. And as a procurement professional, you know how to procure. You will guarantee that hopefully with your involvement, you will get the right contract in place that will be fit for purpose. But you don't have expertise in absolutely every aspect of commercial life. And the downside to the public sector is that when it decides to outsource something, it reduces the budget for that requirement to the outsource value. It doesn't think about what resources it might need in-house to support that outsourcing. You know, and sometimes you need that skill and expertise to be able to define, what does your specification look like? Because if you get your specification right, that's sort of 80% of the battle, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because the suppliers will do a better service if the specification is right. Their bid will be right. If the bid's right, they will provide a better service. Your KPIs for contract management will be spot on. So your stakeholders will be happier with what they are delivered. It's a fantastic circle when you engage a new partner. It works really well. How on earth do you develop that and put that into a learning and development plan to create that skill set? How is that done?
That is something I have yet to tackle, because you're right. It's how do you capture that essence of... And I think, to be honest, what I've been saying to people is just relax about things and just talk to suppliers and just talk, bring your stakeholders in at the start. I always talk about procurement as being this virtuous circle. Not quite sure the government has quite hit the nail on the head by dividing procurement down to four quadrants, because it's turned procurement into a square. Whereas I always used to see procurement as this lovely circle. So you if you get the foundations of your procurement right, so you know what is being spent in your organisation, you've got details of all your contracts, you know when they're going to expire, you know what your termination notices are, that sort of thing. If you can plan your next iteration of that contract properly and get all the specifications in order to get the right T's and C's in place, then your procurement will go smoothly. You'll probably, or you should then, end up with the right supplier to support you in your contracting journey. It's then a case of making sure that that contract management happens. Because anecdotally, they say, well, you're probably going to save at least 10% through active contract management. Because procurement can deliver all the savings in the world. And I always balk at the fact that procurement officials or procurement teams are judged by the amount of savings they can say that they've achieved. But in reality, have they achieved them? If that money is not taken off people's budgets, those savings haven't been achieved. If the contracts aren't managed, those savings are unlikely to be achieved. But equally, when the contract's coming to an end, if you haven't managed your contract, how do you know what's gone well and what's not gone so well? Because my view is, whenever you're going to ask technical and quality questions in a tender exercise, focus on what's gone badly the last time. Because if that needs to be addressed in your next contract, you want that in writing, in black and white from your suppliers, and bound into the contract. So, you know, this virtuous circle, if you procure correctly, you're going to have a better contract. If you manage that contract correctly, you're going to be able to inform the next iteration of that contract. And hopefully every time it improves ever so slightly.
I would see that as a perfect example of a good procurement process. And this is where the challenge happens, isn't it? Because actually there's such lean procurement teams.
Yeah.
In a lot of organisations, the contract management and the supplier relationship management is disseminated away from the procurement team. Mm. They have a specific purpose, you know, is to go out to tender and to award contract. That's it. That's their block. And it stops that circle taking place, or it makes it harder because that communication between those teams isn't always great, especially if you're working remotely. You know, you might not even be aware of who the contract manager is that you are handing that over to at the end of the process, who to catch up with. Mm. And then, of course, there's all the myths and misconceptions about, well, you can't speak to the supplier because everything's published through the portal and it all has to be fair and correct, which is right. You know, it needs to be transparent and fair, but there's
Absolutely.
A way to do it. What do you think are the most common misconceptions in procurement at the moment?
Well, I mean, this has dogged me all my life, and that is one of communication and one of getting the right people around the table at the right time. One of the times I can remember back to a time when I was seconded into Railtrack. And it was 1998-99, and it was station regeneration. So across the country, they were investing a lot of money into improving stations, dealing with health and safety issues, but generally making station experiences better for passengers. And we had, I was on the major projects team in the Northwest and responsible for setting budgets and procuring the works. And we had a scheme that was £21 million. I was adamant it was £21 million. We weren't getting away from that. At the centre, the ruling was it's £20 million, and they took £1 million off us. And so we did our best, and we procured, and we handed over. We had a proper handover to a contract management team, so there was this seamless transition. The contract management team were involved at the very start of the feasibility, and they were part of that process, and it was handed over to them. And at the end of the contract, the quantity surveyor who was on the from the sort of contract management side contacted me to say, I hate to tell you this, Mark, but you were the final accounts within £100,000 of your 21 point something million pound exercise. So they've had to stump up another £1 million from the centre because you were right. And I said, well, I knew I was right. I knew what that job was going to cost. Mm-hmm. So if you've got the confidence to know what you can bring to the table in any procurement exercise, whether it's some technical knowledge because that's your bag, or whether it's just your procurement knowledge because you know what the right way is to go about the procurement. You know, just if you can get the right stakeholders around the table and they all bring that piece of the jigsaw together, the picture hopefully will be created. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. And I think you're right. It's about having the confidence to engage your stakeholders and their specialisms. And I think now it's referred to as vulnerable leadership because it's acknowledging that you are not an expert in everything, but there are experts available to call on in the right moment that will make what you delivered there, you know, within so many hundred pounds of the final budget possible because you've got the right information, you've spoken to the right people. And that's time consuming, you know, that is time consuming. And I think a lot of organisations, a lot of procurement professionals now, they feel so under pressure in terms of delivering procurements within 3 months that it is just being pushed out three frames.
The answer is in our hands. As a procurement professional, the answer is in your hands. You are under whatever pressure you are allowed to be put under. So if you're under pressure to get something sorted within 2 or 3 months, is that because you haven't got your procurement foundations right? And I say, one of the things I say to everybody is, give procurement professionals the time away from the hands-on job of procurement to get the foundations of procurement in the right order. So get your spend analysis in place. Know within your organisation who is spending how much on what and with whom. Get your contracts register sorted out so you know what contracts your organisation has, when they're due to expire, what the notice periods are, because that gives you your pipeline of work. So you should never have that shock of thinking, oh, this major procurement exercise needs to take place in 3 months. Oh, and would you believe it, it's a 4 month procurement process from start to finish, because you will know what that is, you know. And if something comes out of the woodwork that sprung upon you, think about what you can do as an interim relief to give you the time to then do a proper planning exercise. But so yes, when procurement colleagues complain about always being under the cosh, you know, I sit there smugly sometimes and think, well, in my last 4 years, seconded into one of our clients, a university, I was able at a moment's notice to tell them exactly who within their organisation was spending the money and what they were spending it on. I had that pipeline of work. I knew what contracts were off contract, what spend was off contract. I knew what we were targeting to try and get that down. And the vice principals who were in charge of both education and back office delivery had that information at their fingertips and could talk to their staff, their budget holders. So the answer lies in your own hands to get your foundations of procurement right. And hopefully then you'll be in a better position to fight back and say, well, actually, we can deal with this a different way, or we can part that, or yes, all right, we react to this and this can wait.
Yes, and it's the ability to pre-plan where to find that information. And that often comes with tenure and experience, doesn't it? And I think we, in the public sector, not-for-profit and higher education, because of the pace of things now, and a lot of people will disagree with me because they've got a reputation in the public sector for procurement being bureaucratic and slow. But if you don't allow people the time to make some mistakes early in their career, to learn, to process, you don't end up with the strong, credible commercial procurement professionals that you want and need in the market. You know, do you think that's a fair review in your opinion? Do you think that procurement in the public sector could be more commercial, could be quicker, or do you think that it needs more time?
It can be commercial and it can be quicker. I think time should be invested where time is required. Mm. You know, but for the majority of sort of the day-to-day stuff, you can be quick. There are mechanisms out there. I'm not trying to plug our frameworks, but what's the point of reinventing the wheel? If there is a framework that's been set up that's achieving value for money for your run-of-the-mill stuff, go through a framework, because that takes you, a mini competition is 4 or 5 weeks rather than a 3 month process. You know, the number of open tenders or the new competitive flexible procedure tenders that the public sector gets involved with should really be for the real one-off curiosities, where you can have the time to develop with your suppliers exactly what you need and how can that can be put in place. So it's horses for courses, really. Spend time where it's really important, especially if that's going to end up being something that's in the public eye. And for the run-of-the-mill stuff, just grind that out through framework call-offs.
Yeah, and that makes sense. It's a prioritisation approach, isn't it? And actually, things aren't always prioritised by spend. Sometimes the risk on something that's a minimal spend to the organisation is more risky than something that's of a big value because of what it is and what it means to that business. And so I think when organisations prioritise just via spend, yeah, I always think that's a big mistake, because what about those things that could make the business fall apart that are going under threshold that you're not aware of?
Another thing that you're very astute with that one, because you will see in any contract procedure rules or any institution's financial regulations, procurement divided up into spend categories. So you'll have something like 0 to 5 or 10K, single quotation, just get it in writing, the happier you're getting value for money. 10K to 50K, three written quotations. Don't have to choose the lowest, choose the one that's best value. 50K to threshold, five tenders, threshold and above, full compliance with the Act. Now, and yet there can be some things at 25, 30 grand that if they fall over as an institution, you are going to be absolutely up the creek without a paddle. And yet there can be some things that's 150, 160, 170 grand worth of spend over a 2 or 3 year, 4 year period, where in reality it's run of the mill, you know. So don't be thinking all the time in terms of value bands. Think about who's responsible with it for budgets and where those responsibilities lie in terms of risk. So factor risk in as much as you factor value in.
Absolutely right. That's a very good point to move on to our final two questions, because I'm conscious of time and I suspected this would happen because we do love a chinwag. So second to final question. If you could tell public sector leaders one thing about investing in their procurement teams, what would it be?
Give your procurement teams the time to get their house in order. Don't expect miracles from day one. I mean, we're talking here as though people have procurement teams. So the first piece of advice I can give to anyone in the finance service is create some sort of procurement function, whether that's in-house or consider outsourcing your procurement function, but have a procurement function. And when you have that procurement function, start with the basics, get your foundations right. Look at what you can sort of leave your budget holders to get on with minimal support. Don't go down the route of policing every single purchase order that comes in, but initially maybe rely on spend analysis at the end of a financial year to review what might have gone wrong. Don't worry about being 100% compliant within a very short time scale. As long as you can identify where you are not compliant and have a plan in place for addressing non-compliance, even if it takes you 2, 3 or 4 years, you will be better for it than trying to rush into it. So that's probably the one piece of advice I can give. Yeah.
Very sensible, very sage advice. Final question.
Yeah.
What's your truth about working in the public sector?
There we are. What is my truth about working in the public sector? I'm lucky. I work for a charity. When you work for an organisation that makes a surplus and not a profit, there is a different ethos entirely. I am so incredibly lucky that I can, at my age, in my sort of late 50s, start to offload all of my knowledge and skills on the next generation and support education to focus on what it's there for in the first place, and that is getting students, pupils and students, to a better place, to be better citizens and to have careers in the future. So, you know, the little part that we play and the little part that I play, at least I feel as though I'm investing that time and resource into something that's worthwhile. So that's my procurement truth, that I'm very happy at my age to start downloading the contents of my grey matter and passing that on to other people. And I am not afraid to see people biting at my heels now. I would love people to be saying, come on, move out of the way, mate. You're 57. You know, let someone younger come through. I would encourage it.
What a fantastic legacy and a brilliant way to leave the podcast. You are, your present, so the Crescent Purchasing Consortium are going to be at ProcureX. Much looking forward to visiting the stall and seeing the rest of the team and hearing more about the fantastic work that this charity is doing. Thank you so much for letting me record our conversation, Mark. Thank you.
Thank you, Hannah. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I look forward to meeting you in the flesh tomorrow.